Guitarathon is the greatest guitar sale on earth, and it's happening now. Get massive savings on a huge selection of electric and acoustic guitars, basses, amps, pedals, and other accessories. Get select Ernie Ball strings, 3 for $10. Save $100 on a Fender Special Edition Strat, or get a Yamaha acoustic for just $199. Plus, get special financing on select major brands. Don't miss these incredible deals. Available online and in-store, now through November 1st. Guitarathon, only at Guitar Center. Find your sound.
You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everyone, to a new episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. It's Thursday afternoon. The Rockets still in the aftermath of their big win, 115-111 in Game 2 on Wednesday night at Toyota Center. They just wrapped up practice at Toyota Center this afternoon. Now they're catching a flight pretty much as we speak to get to Oklahoma City. They'll get there at a decent hour in time to go to dinner, hopefully get to bed at a decent hour, and then, of course, get ready to play Game 3 tomorrow night on Friday night, ESPN in Oklahoma City. So to break down not just what happened last night in Game 2, but what adjustments these two teams might make in Game 3 and the rest of the series, I'm joined by a frequent guest on this show, my good friend Kelly Scaletta, columnist for not just the Rockets, but the NBA as a whole, for FanRag Sports, also Bleacher Report. Kelly, how's it going today, man?
Good. How's it going, man?
Oh, pretty good. I think everyone in the Rockets community is feeling pretty good right about now. And you had a really interesting column posted just a few hours ago. Is Russell Westbrook shooting the Thunder out of the playoffs? And it's a bit unconventional for me to start with that because Locked On Rockets, we're a Rockets-themed podcast, but of course you're in a series with the Thunder, and I think it's pretty clear after last night, even as far as the Rockets go, Russell Westbrook was the biggest story. Because in the first three quarters, when the Thunder led pretty much the entire way, he was the biggest story in a positive sense. And then in the fourth quarter, as much as anything Houston did, Westbrook's immense struggles, I would say he essentially went 2 of 14. I know he finished 4 of 18, but two of those makes came in garbage time after the Rockets went up 10 with 2 minutes left, and by that point the game was over. So you may as well say he went 2 of 14 when it really mattered. So in a sense, Westbrook was the MVP in a good way for the Thunder in the first three quarters, and then he was the MVP in the wrong way in the final quarter. So as far as the Rockets are concerned, he was pretty much the story. And it's tough to have really level-headed Russell Westbrook conversation, I feel like, because a lot of fans and even media, some nationally I would say, there just seems to be a certain cumulative number, and in this case a 50-point triple-double, to where to some folks it makes him immune for criticism. And one of the things I like about you, Kelly, you know, me and you, we can be adults. We can be reasonable about this. And yeah, there were moments last night where Russ was absolutely breathtaking. But at the same time, we have to be honest and admit that the fourth quarter, he was a real problem. So concisely, if you can, break down what you pointed out in that column and where you draw the line between, okay, this guy is a really phenomenal player versus this guy in the fourth quarter was absolutely a problem for them.
Yeah, I think there's one thing that, like, if there's one thing we've learned in basketball over the last 10 years, as we've kind of become more and more aware of things through analytics, it's that possessions are everything. Efficiency is everything. And Russell Westbrook, you know, he accounted for 51 points last night, but he used 51 possessions in true shooting attempts, mm-hmm. which I think it was, and then when you add in his turnovers, he had 4 turnovers. So the Thunder's offensive rating on possessions that he used was around 92.
And that's not very good.
That's just bad, and especially in the fourth quarter, I didn't figure out that. But he took what was it? 18 shot attempts?
Yeah.
That's just an insane number, and especially if you're not making them. And you know, and there's several video examples that I used.
Mm-hmm.
where it's not just, you know, people will say, well, he doesn't have anybody around him, right? That's the standard excuse. He doesn't have anybody. But there are several video examples where there are shooters. Like Grant, he's 40% from corner threes.
Like Doug McDermott, who was 3 of 4 last night.
Yeah, and Doug McDermott is, you know, he's a career close to 40% three-point shooter. And he was hot, he was feeling it. His true shooting percentage for the playoffs is 100. I think that's fair to say. It's pretty efficient. It's only on 7 shots, but that he only has 7 shots is part of the problem. And so, you know, I think there's, but to me, what was the most compelling thing is there was one play where Rust kind of drove it into the paint.
Mm-hmm.
3 Rocket defenders collapsed on him. Doug McDermott is there just like begging for the ball. Grant is in the corner, wide open. Houston is absolutely ignoring both of them. They were treating them both like they were Roberson.
Mm.
Utterly indifferent to them. And because they were all just collapsed on Westbrook. And this is where I was like, wow, now that's when you have a problem. When you are so convinced that Westbrook is just going to take the shot, that you don't worry about anyone else at all on the court, and you get away with it because you're right. You know, it's like I said in the article, if you're going to ball hog it to that point, you're just going to be bacon.
Yeah.
There's no way around it. There's no way Westbrook can just go 1-on-5 every possession. And he's not going to win a three-point shooting contest with the Houston Rockets, the three-point shooting team of all time.
That
just gets into stupid basketball.
I thought one of the really good points at halftime of this game from Brian Geltzeiler, the Hoops critic, he pointed out that the pace at which the Thunder were playing, and he actually made this point to me on this show before the series, that it essentially baited Russ. You know, there'd be moments where things go really well, but eventually that pace would catch up with him because no matter how much he wants to run, they're not going to run as well as the Rockets, and they're not going to shoot threes as well as the Rockets. And eventually it caught up with them in the fourth quarter because Westbrook's shot finally faded, ended up 17 of 43 for the game. Still can't believe 43 shots in an NBA game. That's just absolutely nuts to me. But
and 18 free throws.
Yeah. Wow.
It's not even like he wasn't getting to the stripe.
Yeah. Well,
61 true shooting attempts. That's like that. You know, as far back as 83-84 goes, you know, that's as far back as the Planets goes. That's the most true shooting attempts ever in an NBA game, as far as we can trace it back.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kelly, one of the things that I'm curious about is the reasoning behind what's going on with Russ. I've seen a lot of folks on Twitter, you know, again, you have to point out that, yes, Russ did have a 50-point triple-double. He's still a phenomenal talent, certainly, breathtaking at times. And so, of course, there are people on Twitter, we know who these people are, that just look to absolve him of criticism all the time, no matter what. It's just a reflex. And the thing I've seen today, now obviously you can use the fatigue excuse, but I don't really buy that because even if he was fatigued, it was partially of his own doing from the style they went. What interests me more is people saying that, well, maybe it's not all his decision making. Maybe it's the fact that his teammates are too caught up watching the Rush show or Billy Donovan isn't drawing up the right plays to get his teammates involved. What I thought you did pretty good in your article, you can see from the screenshots, the videos, it's pretty clear that there are guys open and asking for the ball. It's just a matter of Russ has to make that read and trust them. I don't think that the other players are just sitting there twiddling their thumbs. They're trying to execute a game plan. It's just that once the game gets to a certain point, Russ just isn't trusting them. And to me, that's more on Russ than it is Billy Donovan or the supporting cast.
Yeah, And that's why I wanted to go through and actually that's why I wanted to write the article. Mm-hmm. Because there are plays and it's like these kind of maybes are fine, but you have to go back and you have to look if that's the case or not. And if you go and you just look at the video, if you just look at the shots he misses, there are just too many shots where there are other players that can shoot, that have open shots. And it's not even that he's looking them off. It's that he's not even looking at them at all. He's not even acknowledging they exist. He's the only one on the court. And so, I just don't buy that. And, this was one of the things that was in the whole MVP debate, is that James Harden had this perfect system around him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And really, he did. Like, that's not a bad thing. They put that system around him because he was able to execute it. Kobe Bryant couldn't execute that system.
Right.
Carmelo Anthony couldn't execute that system. Steve Nash won two MVPs executing that system, but not as well. So, I don't know why that's a criticism of Harden, but it got me to wondering, what is the best system for Harden or for Westbrook?
Mm-hmm.
And is there really a better system for Westbrook than just give him the ball and get the hell out of the way?
No, that's a good question. It seems like that's why I can't draw up a better system in theory. Guys are open. He's having phenomenal games. He's just got to go out there and execute it, for lack of a better phrase.
And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the GEICO app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the GEICO app, look it in the mouth, get amazing services. Thank you.
And Kelly, I want to turn to the Rockets side of this because we've been, first 10 minutes, talking mostly about Westbrook. And of course, it's not all about him. The Rockets made some defensive adjustments as well. Both of Game 1 and Game 2 in this series, the Rockets have been phenomenal defensively in the second half. 43 points last night in the second half after giving up 68 in the first half. In Game 1, they gave up just 33 in the second half. So Jeff Bezdelic is clearly doing some better things. In terms of Russ, I thought Game 1 was pretty standard. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's the saying. Pat Beverly went out there. He had a great game. Russell was generally terrible. And so Beverly, when he was on the floor, pretty much all of those 26 minutes, he picked up Russ, and that was that. Last night, it was a lot different. Bev certainly covered him some, but Russ got hot. Now, it wasn't all Bev playing poor defense. Some of it was just Russ getting hot. But in the fourth quarter, I thought they really diversified their looks a lot. You know, it started off, Steven Adams got into foul trouble, and then they started having Clint Capela. That was a stretch where he played really well. They started switching, and Capela did really well at moving his feet laterally to stick with Westbrook. That gave him some problems. Then down the stretch of the game, it seemed like the Rockets almost traded off. Beverly had some possessions. Gordon had some possessions. Trevor Ariza had some, especially late, where it looked like Ariza's length maybe bothered Westbrook a little bit. But it just seemed like to me that the Rockets made kind of a decision that, hey, we're not going to give any sort of consistency to Russell. We're going to mix it up. And maybe part of what happened to Russell down the stretch, he couldn't get into a groove because the Rockets did a pretty good job not letting him know what to expect from possession to possession. Is that something that you saw?
Ryan Henderson even got in a block, right?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, they rotated pretty well. And, of course, part of it goes, you know, you're able to rotate more when you don't think he's going to pass, as we were saying earlier. But even in terms of just one-on-one defense, they mixed up the looks a lot to where Russell, it was very unpredictable. Whereas Game 1, you know, it was Beverly, I'd say 90% of the time. And, of course, it started that way in the first quarter as well. But down the stretch, they did a pretty good job, Jeff Bezdelic, of diversifying what they threw at him to where I think it also kept Russell off guard, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah. And I think, you know, like you mentioned, that Capela really is the one that got it going. And his rim protection was just beautiful. And just not just, you know, like specifically at the rim, but in terms of just keeping Westbrook from being able to get to it. And then after that Russ just turned into a jump shooter. And Russ is not going to win games as a jump shooter. He's just not a very good jump shooter. And, and then Beverly just, did what Beverly does, which is, just irritate him. He tried doing that one flop where...
Oh, yeah.
He tried to flop his way into a flagrant, which I guess it was technically probably a foul. But I don't know if it was a foul where it's worth rolling on the ground for 5 minutes pretending that you
not so
just
much.
Got your face raked off.
Right, yeah, that was ridiculous.
Which is funny, because he's the one that complains about Harden.
Yeah.
But, I thought it was a good team effort, but I think Capella is really the one that set the tone for that.
Yeah, and I really thought a lot of this comes down to effort. When you look at, what adjustments does Houston make for Game 3, because certainly this was a lot closer than Game 1. Actually, Houston didn't even take a lead until 9 minutes left. Obviously, you need Ryan Anderson to make some shots. That's a big one. He's like 0 of 11 now from 3, something crazy like that. And he's getting wide open looks, Kelly. I mean, he's getting good looks. He just needs to make them. So certainly that's the obvious adjustment. Have Ryan make shots. And, of course, even if Lou Williams and Eric Gordon cool off a little bit, if you get more normal production from the likes of Ryan and Trevor Ariza, that potentially offsets that. But beyond that, the thing that encourages me for the Rockets is that even when they were struggling, it felt like the struggles were a little unsustainable. Because whenever the Rockets put their full attention on defense and rebounding, one of my followers pointed out last night, the Rockets were actually down double digits in rebounding with about 4 minutes left in the third quarter. And then they out-rebounded Oklahoma City the rest of the game, I think 16-12. And so when they when they turned up the energy, and of course Capella was a big part of that. Capella had 10 rebounds and 4 blocks in his 23 minutes. But if they turn up the energy, both on the perimeter and around the bucket, the way they did last night, it's just so tough for Oklahoma City to have a path, because unless they're able to crash the glass successfully, and they did it for 30 minutes, but they couldn't do it for 48 minutes, unless Oklahoma City crushes the glass, as long as Houston has a strategy to even draw close to even on the glass, it seems hard for me to see a path. I don't want to say for Oklahoma City to win a game, because certainly you have Russell Westbrook. He can go insane and score 50 points by being more efficient, and the Rockets miss some threes. They can certainly win a game, but if the Rockets are competitive on the glass, it seems pretty difficult for Oklahoma City to win more than maybe one game. Is that kind of how you see it?
Yeah, and that's the thing about this, is not only is Houston up to zip, they're up to zip, and it's not like they're playing their best. It's not like they're playing badly.
Yeah.
But, it's not like you've never seen Oklahoma, or you've never seen the Rockets play this well.
Yeah.
It's not like a case where, like Chicago's up 2-0 on the Celtics, and they look like a completely different team than they've looked all season.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the big advantages they have. Is there's always this sort of mantra that jump shooting teams can't win. And I think Houston is an outlier in that, because most jump shooting teams, they're like spearheaded by like one or two guys that can hit a lot of shots.
Mm-hmm.
Even the Warriors, outside of Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, don't have a lot of great jump shooters. Depending on if you want to call Kevin Durant a good or great jump shooter.
Mm-hmm.
But Draymond Green is not a great jump shooter. Andre Iguodala is not a good jump shooter. They don't. It's like those two guys set the tone for the rest, and then when they're on and they're stretching the court, it makes it easier for everybody else to get their shots. So if one or two guys cools off, it gets difficult for everyone else. But with Houston, they have so many really good jump shooters. Ryan Anderson and Lou Williams and Eric Gordon and James Harden and Patrick Beverly and it's just, they have so many guys that shoot, and it's just, not everybody is going to be cold at the same time. So right now, Anderson and Ariza are cold. But, maybe if Williams and Gordon cool off, like you were saying, Ariza and Anderson heat up.
Yeah.
When you've got like six, seven guys that can shoot, you're always going to have one or two of them that their shot is falling, and then you just go with that guy.
Yeah, and as you were saying earlier, it's not like they've even played a complete game yet, you know, because we're talking about these adjustments. One game they won by 30. The other, they came back, outscored the Thunder by pretty much 20 points. You could almost throw out what happened in the last couple of minutes, because once Houston went up 10 with two to go, it was over. You know, they didn't really play defense that well until the last 18 minutes of the game. So certainly you can see more, in terms of adjustments, more effort on defense and rebounding the same way they did in game one and the last 18 minutes of game two. They can do that. You could have all your shooters clicking at one time. I mean, the Rockets are in a pretty strong spot because, yeah, there's all these things we're talking about, and they haven't even played a complete game yet. So, yeah, it almost seems like to me there's still more upside for the Rockets than the Thunder. Because the Thunder, you know, even with the Rockets out-rebounding them last night, the Thunder still won the rebounding battle by double digits. They still had Russell Westbrook score 50 points in the first three quarters. He was downright electric. They checked so many boxes. Doug McDermott came in and made three big threes. They had a lot of boxes checked, and yet they still lost to a Rockets team that didn't come close to checking all their boxes. So, yeah, to me, there's still more upside when you look at, you know, which of these two teams can get better. It actually seems like there's more possibility for Houston to get better than there is for Oklahoma City. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah, I think it's completely fair to say. I do think, you know, the one advantage that won't be there in games three and four is they won't be in Houston.
Yeah.
And Oklahoma City is one of those teams that play a lot better at home than on the road. But, you know, it was like before the series, I said, you know, I think Russell Westbrook is going to win the MVP, but efficiency wins games. And ultimately, that's what it comes down to. And, are you familiar with the player impact estimate stat on NBA.com?
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
All right. Did you see what Westbrook's fourth quarter pie is?
I don't remember exactly. It was
his uniform number.
Oh, wow. There you go.
I have never seen a zero pie. You know, and for, you know, like your listeners that don't know what that is, that's basically, you know, the idea is that, you know, like the acronym is PI, and so there's like a total percentage of positive plays that are on the court, and then your PI is like your percentage of those positive plays that are on the court, and so it, you know, it has a formula and accounts for positive and negative plays, so that your negative plays you know, counter your positive plays a little bit. A good pie is like 20%.
Yes.
You know, if the teams are even, both teams are going to be, you know, at 50, right? So
yes.
A good pie is like 20%. An average pie would be 10% because, you know, one-fifth of your team. Russell Westbrook's pie, and I have never, I swear, I have never seen this one this low, and you know, Zach Harper said the same thing to me. His pie is zero.
That's amazing.
And his usage is 57% in the fourth quarter.
Wow.
So he's using 50% of his team's possessions in the fourth quarter, and he's having no impact. No positive impact with 57% usage. When you're using 50% of your team's plays in the fourth quarter and there's zero positive impact, you are going to lose basketball games.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely remarkable.
It's the most stunning thing. And so, you know, like, I feel like he's going to get some of that going in front of his own court. I just don't think anything is sustainably that low. I think there is some regression going to happen there.
Yeah.
And we've seen what happens when he's like gets clicking in those situations.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised to see the Thunder like pull off a game at home.
Yeah.
But I don't see them having any way to win the series.
Yeah, and clearly a big part of it being that low, that's not just all luck. That's also some quality scouting and adjustments made by the Rockets, obviously starting with Jeff Bezdelic, who's essentially their defensive coach. Kelly, before we wrap up the podcast, the one thing we haven't talked about, we spent a lot of the show talking about Russell Westbrook, how the Rockets are guarding him, defensive adjustments, et cetera, et cetera. We actually haven't talked too much about the other side of the floor other than the shooting numbers. Of course, Lou Williams, Eric Gordon were great last night. But James Harden, I think it's being undersold just how great he's been in this series. And it's just two games. But I'm looking, you know, per 100 possessions, he's scoring over 49 points, which is nuts. Like, I'm looking for his career, and he's been really good in the playoffs in his career. He's at about just under 30 points per 100 possessions. He's now over 49 in this series. His player efficiency rating is over 33. His numbers just off the charts, particularly on the offensive end. His true shooting percentage is like 61.4. Just incredible stat lines. And curious what you're seeing from James. For me, what I look at with the Thunder, they changed the game plan a little bit. They didn't switch on quite on everything the way they did in game one. Well, they still switched, but they hedged a little bit more. They didn't just give him the open lanes to the basket all the time. They tried to force a few more passes, gave up a few more threes, because game one was virtually a layup drill. But even with the Thunder contesting a little more, I've been really impressed with how aggressive Harden has been attacking the basket. Because sometimes we've seen during the regular season, I think some of it's trying to conserve energy. He falls in love with the three-pointer. He is relentlessly attacking in this series. I think some of it has to do with how much the Thunder switch, so he gets a big on him a lot. And of course, the best way to take a big is to go straight to the rim. But he's getting to the rim, he's collapsing the defense, and he's also getting fouled. He had 20 free throws last night, which is pretty incredible. Thankfully, made his first 18. But to me, it just seems like, even comparing it to prior postseasons, this is a more aggressive and efficient James Harden than we have ever seen before. And with all the talk about Russ, it's almost overshadowing what, under the radar, is a pretty spectacular offensive series from Harden, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. One of the things that I kind of unearthed when I was looking at this Westbrook article is, I looked at, this is a cool stat, okay, including like times when they drew shooting fouls, field goal attempts, turnovers. According to Synergy, Westbrook has used 91 possessions to score 73 points. Okay? Harden's used 67 to score 72 points.
Wow.
So Westbrook has used 24 more possessions than Harden and scored one more point.
That's, like, yeah, that's staggering.
That really puts the contrast into perspective, right? And Harden is just, I've always felt, and even more this year than ever, and now even in the postseason more than ever, is his, the underrated thing about Harden is his basketball IQ.
Yep.
I put him up there in terms of court vision and making the right play with LeBron James and Chris Paul. He is such a general, and he just runs an offense so well. And people get caught up in, like the fouls he draws and whether they're fouls, and they criticize him for these petty things. Yeah, but he is such a smart player, and I don't know if I just haven't watched it. You know, I haven't looked at this, but it just. Just like in my memory, I don't remember. The one problem I have with him sometimes is that some of his turnovers are just sloppy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't recall, I can't think of that many sloppy turnovers during the first two games. He's played so smart.
There were virtually none in game one. He had a couple in the first half last night where he was a little overly aggressive. Really, I thought the team as a whole came out. And you would expect this. It happens a lot in the NBA after you get a 30-point win. I don't want to say they were fat and happy, but maybe they didn't have the chip on their shoulder until the second half. But he took a couple, occasionally one of those mistakes that I'm sure you're thinking about, because I am. He'll try these almost three-quarter length court passes that are just, the upside is dwarfed by the downside. It's really not giving them that much of a better chance to score, because many times the defense already has someone back. It's just an unnecessary risk compared to the downside of a turnover, and that happened a couple of times yesterday. But yeah, it really mattered. He tightened the screws late, and that's been the big thing for me. The one nitpick, I always thought it was overdone, because boy, if you go back to that Warriors series, 2 years ago in the Western Conference Finals. He was phenomenal, off the charts in three of those five games against an elite Golden State defense. Even last year, you know, he had a game winner against the Warriors, a 41-41 Rockets team, and he gave them a virtual buzzer beater in the playoffs. Also played lights out in the elimination game. So I always thought some of the blame on Harden's playoff reputation was overdone. But in this series, of course, it's two games. Not only has he played this well, he saved his best for last. The second half of both games, he's been out of this world good. The stretch last night, it really seemed like when they got down 12, because that entire game last night yo-yoed between 5 and 12, 5 and 12, you know, more or less. Of course, you have a slight deviation on either side. But yeah, they were down 12 late in the third, and it really felt like Oklahoma City might be, okay, this might be the time that they get real separation, push this to 15 and to 20, and if that margin, if it gets there, that's awfully huge, and that's a tall mountain to climb. But Harden, he made two threes in the final 3 minutes of the third quarter, including one virtually at the buzzer to cut it to three going to the fourth. And that was the point that it just snapped the arena back to life. And I know it's a simplistic thing. I know folks like us, Kelly, we know that Harden's always been elite, certainly his time in Houston. But one of the nitpicks on his resume, and a lot of it's been unfair, is, well, how does he do in these true clutch situations in the playoffs? And this year, through two games, he's been phenomenal overall, but he's been even better in the second half of those games, and especially in game two when it really mattered. So to me, this is, you know, it's early, it's two games, but this has the makings of a statement run for James Harden in my eyes, and so I didn't want to close out the podcast without acknowledging that.
On the heels of that, I'd also like to mention, there was, I can't remember the exact situation, but there was a key play. It was like one of those, because there were a few of them while the score was pretty close to even. It was either like right while Houston was looking like they were going to get past Oklahoma City, or they had just passed, and then Oklahoma City had a chance to go back ahead. I think Beverly got beat or something, and then Harden rotated over and just made this great, great defensive play. I think he got the block. Either blocked it or just really messed up the shot. And then Houston got the rebound. I'm pretty sure from there on out, Houston kind of controlled the rest of the game. And, you know, the announcer said, oh, great play from Houston, you know, great defense from Houston. And I just, you know, it kind of hurt me a little bit. Like, why is it that every time Enes Kanter makes a good defensive play, you have to make it sound like he should win Defensive Player of the Year? But if Harden makes a great defensive play, you can't even mention his name. It's like the narrative of Harden's bad defense is so strong, like they can't even acknowledge it when he makes a really good defensive play.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would say,
I think his defense has actually been pretty solid this series as well.
Yeah, he makes plays when they matter. And, of course, this is a favorable matchup for him because Andre Robertson, you don't have to guard him from the three-point line. Obviously, game one was an analogy. But, yeah, Harden's a very smart defensive player, and that's a big difference between he and Westbrook. Westbrook gets a lot of the headlines because some of his steals are sexier, so to speak. He's more athletic. He does some things that are jaw-dropping. But he takes a lot of unnecessary risk on both ends, especially defensively. There were some possessions last night where I just laughed watching them. You know, what are you doing? I think of one offensively at the end of the game when they were down 10, when he tried to, jump sideways into Eric Gordon rather than just either attack the rim, he had a driving lane, or take the open three. But defensively, to get back to the point, where he takes just some unnecessary gambles, he'll chase from behind. Whereas Harden does a pretty good job. He's cerebral, reads the defense. And so that's less sexy. These announcers, especially Reggie Miller, I'm shuddering as I say that, but those types, they don't give credit to that. But it's more meaningful. And so, yeah, that's a big contrast, too, between Harden and Westbrook, the defensive side. Neither is a standout, but when it matters in the fourth quarter, I trust Harden more than Westbrook defensively because of what Harden does is based on IQ, whereas what Westbrook does defensively, he makes some spectacular plays from time to time, but they're generally more based on his extreme athleticism and burst. And when teams are playing smarter down the stretch, it's easier to take advantage of that than it is Harden, because Harden's IQ is so off the charts, not just offensively, but defensively as well. Kelly, thank you so
much. I like to call Westbrook's defense Chihuahua defense.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That's good to
know. Because it's like lots of energy, lots of barking, not a lot of threat.
Yeah, I like that. Well, Kelly, we can wrap up here. I thank you so much for the time. It's been a great podcast. Your column today on FanRag, for folks that haven't read it, is Russell Westbrook shooting the Thunder right out of the playoffs. Just a great read. And, of course, people can follow you on Twitter, at Kelly Scaletta. Anything else you want to throw out? Plugs? Anything else people should be looking for from you in the coming days?
No, that's good. That's good.
Excellent. Well, Kelly, thank you so much for the time, and I'll be talking with you again hopefully next round, because I think we feel pretty good that the Rockets should be advancing in the next few days, right?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty solid guess.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good. Well, I'll leave it there. Thank you so much for the time, buddy.
All right. Bye.
That's Kelly Scaletta, lead writer for Bleacher Report covering the Rockets, also FanRag Sports. Great columnist, does a lot of good work with videos, GIFs, that kind of stuff. And so I thought his column today really got to the real meat of the issue with Russell Westbrook and just how ridiculous that fourth quarter was. And apologies for spending so much of the podcast talking about Russell Westbrook. I know this is a Rocket show, but certainly in this series, Russell is a big part of the story. His struggles definitely a big reason why the Rockets were able to essentially outscore the Thunder by 20-plus points in true winning time last night. I'd say from about 3 minutes left in the third quarter till 2 minutes left in the fourth, when they went up 10 and the game was virtually over. And as we talked about during the podcast, a lot of it, it's not just about Westbrook missing shots. The Rockets are taking advantage of his scouting report. They've done a good job researching his tendencies. They're showing him different looks. And last night, he started off hot. Game one was easy. He never got going. You just stick Beverly on him. Beverly was hot. He does his thing. Last night, they did a lot of different things. Early in the fourth, it was Capella and how well he moved his feet and provided a presence with that extra length. Then you had Beverly, Gordon, and Ariza essentially alternating possessions, never allowing him to get into rhythm. That's a good job of scouting. It's a good job of anticipating from Jeff Bezdelic, Mike D'Antoni, and, of course, all of the Rockets players. And so, yes, Russell is struggling. That's a big story. But the Rockets are a big part of why he's struggling. And so that deserves to be acknowledged as well. And, of course, as we said closing out the show, James Harden, his numbers absolutely phenomenal. The thing that stands out to me the most, 49 points, over 49 actually, 49.3 per 100 possessions. That is just off the charts how efficient and good that James has been through the first two games. It gets overlooked a lot because everyone wants to talk about, for better or for worse, Russell Westbrook. He's kind of the hot take item, and that's what drives the discussion nationally. But below the radar, James Harden is even better than he was in the regular season, when I think all of us that watch the Rockets feel like he was clearly the MVP of the league, and he's done nothing to change that perception. In fact, he's only enhanced it through these two playoff games. So with that said, I will leave off there because, as I said yesterday, you can't enjoy this as long as you could game one. You had more time off. This one, the Rockets are on a flight to Oklahoma City right now. They're going to get there tonight, hopefully in time for dinner and then a reasonable bedtime, and then back in action tomorrow night, game three, 8:30 in Oklahoma City. ESPN national telecast, Root Sports here locally, if you want to watch there. I certainly do, because I greatly prefer Craig Ackerman and Matt Bullard to the litany of guys you might get on a national telecast. Although, it can't be as bad as TNT. At least be thankful for that. You won't have Reggie Miller on ESPN, so that alone is an upgrade. But, yeah, however you want to watch it, 8:30 tomorrow night. Told you your television options locally and nationally. Also, if you're in Houston, I strongly urge you to come out to Jake's Sports Bar. That's where we're having kind of an unofficial Rockets Twitter, Locked on Rockets watch party. All of you guys that want to watch with me, as well as other folks you know from Rockets Twitter, would love to see y'all. I'm going to be there by 8 p.m. tomorrow night. I'll have tables reserved, so just join me out at Jake's Sports Bar on Chimney Rock tomorrow night, anytime after 8, and I would love to watch Game 3 with you. Until then, I will sign off. Again, this is Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. Follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. Also, email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better show for you, let us know at lockedonrockets@gmail.com. In the meantime, go out and enjoy the rest of your Thursday. And I'll be back with you, in person if you get to Jake's Sports Bar tomorrow night. But regardless, we'll be talking after Game 3, when hopefully the Rockets have a 3-0 lead in this best-of-7 series. For now, have a good evening.